everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Stripped by Sia, your podcast for strippers, sex workers, and all the fancy naked people in between. I'm your host, Steph Sia, aka Kimchi on stage. You can actually catch me on stage. This is new. I finally got a booking. Yay. If you happen to be around for my long weekend, I will be featuring at Status Nightclub in Vernon, BC. So if you catch yourself in the Okanagan Valley, aka Wine Country in British Columbia, I will be dancing there for one night only on May 17th. Come by, dance with me, come chat with me about the show, which I usually love when people do that. Or you can just tip me. That's totally fine. Besides being a dancer, I was also a sugar baby for many years, way back in the day. I'm an on and off cam model, and I'm also an adult content creator, along with so many other sex workers, just doing all the things. And if you are kind of just checking this out for the first time, this show is all about destigmatizing sex work. I bring on different guests every single week to talk about their experience in the industry, wherever their corner of the industry is. So not just talking and reserving this for on-screen talent or other adult creators, but also talking about producers, people that are behind the scenes, nonprofit organizations. We also have people from other countries speaking about what happens in their part of the world in sex work. I have professors and teachers that come into the show as well. So it really just illustrates a really accurate portrayal of what sex work actually is, to not get it twisted. So that we do weekly. I would kill myself if it was daily episodes. I wish I had time, but we do it every single week. New episodes are launching every single Sunday. So big catalog. You can kind of scroll back over 200 episodes there. But yeah, this show's been going on for a little bit. And also thanks to the financial support that folks have started pledging on Patreon over the past couple of years. So just want to say thank you and a big quick shout out to those who are on the top two tiers there. So just wanted to say hello to Snoo Snoo. We've got, who's from Germany. We've got Justin Erickson from Vancouver, Washington. Geyser. We've got Selena Money. We've got Moxie Mayhem, Eric Araujo. We have B. York from Seattle. We've got McKenna King from Edmonton. And then of course, Dan from Red Dirt Products down in Seattle as well. Thank you all for financially contributing to the show. As you know, that money goes all towards website hosting for stripbysia.com and also helps me fund anytime I go to any kind of like adult industry event. Currently, that's not looking like much this year, but we shall see what happens in the second half of the year. But no, sorry, folks. I know I keep getting asked to go to Expos. I am not going to Expos this year because life is busy. But yeah, if you do want to check out Patreon, you do get some video exclusive access there. You also get access to the episode a bit earlier because now this is on YouTube now. So, and I'm going to slowly start releasing the exclusive video content, which was released seasons ago, to my Patreon subscribers. So if you are interested in that, all that juicy content, it is patreon.com/strippedbysia. And we have tiers starting out as low as $4 a month. Okay, so I feel super rusty today, but I am confident that our guest this week can really carry on the conversation. We have so much to talk about today. It's going to be a completely packed episode. So strap up, strap in. We are going to be talking about sex worker rights in relation to queer rights and vice versa as well, how those are parallels. So we are going to be talking about Sesta Fosta. We're going to be talking about, as I mentioned, sex work rights and discrimination and how that also can also lead towards queer rights, or should we say lack of queer rights, lack of sex worker rights. There's a lot of similarities here that we will discuss in detail with today's guest. And we've already peeped the title. You may be excited because we have a veteran in the industry who's going to be talking about all the things with me today. Almost 2 decades in the industry, an AVN Hall of Famer, adult performer, outspoken advocate, also producer, and also the host of the podcast, Sage Advice. If you haven't guessed already, we have the lovely Sin Sage on the show this week. Sin, hello. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm absolutely blessed to be here.
Oh my gosh. Well, we are very excited to have you. I'm super stoked. And thank you for calling me out for not confirming our time to record today. I really appreciate that. That never happens, but thank you so much and your flexibility for recording, because we have some really important topics to talk about today. Yes. But before we get started, maybe we can talk a little bit about you, because again, that's just what I can find on the internet from like internet sleuthing and stalking on you.
You found some really nice places saying cool things about me, so I like that.
I do my research.
So I'm Sin Sage. I have been in the industry for 20 years. What year is it, 2024? Yeah, so this will be my 21st year. And let's see, started out, spent some years as a stripper, also performer in the adult industry, and then transferred to producing my own content. And so I do all those things now. And I have also cammed, and I have also, you know, night flirt phone sexed. And of course, I've got an OnlyFans. And so, yeah, all that stuff. And I've done the occasional session, which is usually tends to be for me more like maybe a wrestling session or a tickling session. So some in-person work, but along those lines, more sort of fetish oriented. And yeah, and I'm also an advocate for sex worker rights, for queer rights, and call myself an educator as well, a sex educator, and yeah, all those things.
Hell yeah. Yeah, you've done a lot and you've accomplished a lot. And like, I mean, your time in the industry says it all as well. So I'm really, first of all, congratulations, because 21 years in the industry is like amazing.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I'm a lifer, so.
You're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Well, in addition to that, I think you've also guest lectured as well. You could add that to the list too. I forgot to mention that in the intro, but I'm stoked. True. Yeah, and we will hopefully have some time to talk about some of the topics you've done at some lectures and conferences as well.
Yeah, conferences, universities I've spoken at, yeah. That's been huge for me.
Lots of accomplishments.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
So great. I mean, again, there's going to be a lot to unpack here. And since we haven't had an episode that is specifically on sex worker rights and also just like some of the legalities, we haven't had this maybe 10, 15 episodes. So maybe folks might need a refresher, or maybe some folks that are listening are brand new here, but maybe we can start off with what is sex trafficking. And I swear this will all make sense in the end and how it relates to all the topics at hand. But maybe we can start off there.
Yeah. So this is the main issue of all this demonization, villainization of sex work. It's just a huge problem where sex work is conflated with sex trafficking. This was started happening less than 10 years ago, has really ramped up in efforts. Sex trafficking, like human trafficking, is taking people against their will and forcing them to do labor, usually for no money. So obviously when you add the word sex onto human trafficking, then it's much more salacious. People are intrigued by that. Mm-hmm. You know, of all the Law and Order, Special Victims Unit is the one that people watch the most. And I mean, yes. I used to watch it a lot too.
Because, me too.
Yeah. I'm a human. Yeah. But it does. It just adds this tinge of naughtiness, I guess. And it just like, makes people more intrigued and interested. But when they hear about sex trafficking specifically, they send their money to sex trafficking organizations with probably the best of intentions.
Yes.
But then they look at sex workers and only think very disparaging things and only think that like no one would choose this work. No respectable person would choose to do this kind of labor. So therefore, you're a victim of something or another, and we need to find ways to pull you out of sex work.
Yes.
And very often they attempt to or do pull people out of sex work and leave them with nothing, with no means to actually take care of themselves, to pay their bills, to feed themselves, to house themselves. And that just leads to more problems, and then you usually end up back in sex work. Rather than just talking about delineating the difference, I mean, being forced to do something versus choosing to do something.
Big difference.
Yeah.
Big difference. And and then this also will be related to a topic later when we talk about Seth FOSTA. That conflation is a huge thing that politicians really like to lean on and use it in their political agendas to, again, we need to save these women. And there's not all women that are sex workers, but again, just knowing the difference between a trafficked person, a person who is exploited, and a person who is making real adult consenting choices to be in this work. So, yes. Yeah.
Definitely. Those things are really important to notice the difference. And it is interesting how the very concept of this is being, it's infiltrating all the way to the top levels of the government. And now it's become law, and it's law that was enacted based on a bunch of things that are not true, a bunch of sort of disbeliefs and almost like mythologies. And this isn't to say, like, again, so two things, something you mentioned, it is not that all sex workers are women by any means. But in a lot of times when I talk about sex work, it is about women, just because to me, patriarchy and capitalism does not want women owning their own means of production, does not want women having that level of power and agency.
Yeah.
Which I think we can see across the board in a lot of like the Dobbs decision and other things of that nature. So there's that. And so that's why I think, and then it is like the majority, it's women. So I don't want to discount men in the sex industry, because you are a part of my family. Mm-hmm. But a lot of these discussions has to do with, you know, misogyny and patriarchy and things like that. So
no, totally. I mean, yeah. Going back to like common like misconceptions too, like when people think of sex trafficking, because sex trafficking is just like a branch of human trafficking, like human trafficking as like the big umbrella, and sex trafficking is just like one portion of it. I think there's seven of them in total. But sometimes I think another common misconception is that like, oh, sex trafficking happens like in like Southeast Asia and, you know, Eastern Europe and stuff like that too, when a lot of it actually happens right here in our backyard. And that's just like a frustrating thing, that it's just a frustrating image that people only think of the one thing it could be. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, and of course that has to do a lot with our xenophobia and the way we look at other countries, the way we look at people who look differently than us or whatever. But this is the other thing I wanted to make clear, is that I'm not sitting here as a sex worker saying sex trafficking is not a real thing that happens. It is a real thing that happens. And that's why Seth FOSTA was written by someone who was a victim. And I know that like the intentions were really, really good, but the practice and the way that it has played out have the opposite effect, and continue to, in not just Seth FOSTA, but all of this anti-sex work stuff.
Yes.
All it ends up doing is making more victims, is causing more harm, period.
Yes.
If we could just accept that human beings are sexual creatures, accept that it's a valid labor, it's a valid form of labor, then we could start to address all of these problems. But instead, it's like, close the book, put a lock on it, shut it away. We don't talk about those things.
Right.
So now you're making it evil and taboo to discuss. And so there's no common sense like legislation or even discussion happening around it to actually make lives better.
Oh yes, no, definitely. You said so many things here. Like, it's, we still are in this like don't ask, don't tell taboo-ness that you had mentioned, and that's just like sex in general, whether it's a sex industry, it's just sex in general. People like don't want to hear about it. You have to wear, like, cover yourself up, like all of that kind of attitude, especially here in North America. I think that's like one thing that I think that we can perhaps try to be more open-minded about, and like that's learn from other countries. Yes.
But then these podcasts.
This is what we're trying to do, and as well as on the Sins podcast as well. So yeah, I think you know, going back to what you were mentioning, like, like Sesta Foster started from a sex trafficking survivor. Maybe we can actually start there and like maybe do a bit of defining in terms of like, can you remind everyone what Sesta Fosta is? And just because I don't want to assume that all of my listeners are American, they're not. There's a lot of us that are also in Canada, but also elsewhere in the world too. Yeah. So let's maybe start there.
Yeah. So Fosta Sesta. Fosta stands for Fight Online Sex Trafficking Act. And Sesta stands for Stop Enabling Sex Traffickers.
Yep.
Act.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's what it stands for. And what it essentially did was, so we used to have this sort of freedom of speech on the internet. And I mean, we do in a lot of ways. I mean, people are very, very shitty freely all the time.
Yep.
But the people who owned a website, if you had a website, then people could go and post on your forums or whatever. And if they posted something that was illegal or incited illegality, then the person who owned the website was not going to be held liable or responsible legally for the things that users were doing on their website.
Right.
So this also, but this is like the internet was different. This is before social media. So now that social media came along and you do have sites like, let's say, Craigslist used to have a personals site before this law passed. And people would use sites like that. I would say likely majority consensual sex workers. And they would screen clients and they would make dates. Stuff like that would happen. And so that was sort of became the target. And the way they wrote the law was that now if you run a site that has a forum, so like Twitter, like
Reddit,
Instagram, all those places, if there is, if sex trafficking is found to have been enabled from your website, you as the owner of the website are now held accountable, whether you had anything to do with it or not. So that obviously scared a bunch of websites. I mean, as it should. Now you're responsible for something like a place that you just made available. And now you will be the one who goes to jail if someone uses it for something nefarious.
Right.
So those sites just got shut down.
Yeah.
Like the Craigslist is like, sorry, we will no longer have these personal services.
Yeah. Backpage's gone too. Yeah. That's kind of like an end of an era for a lot of folks.
Yeah, it really was. And so that I know that the idea behind it was, well, once we shut those spaces down, then no one will be able to do this online sex trafficking thing or whatever.
Oh my God, but no.
That is not how things turned out.
No.
What actually ended up happening is that, so previously when, let's say, Backpage was a thing, some of the people on Backpage were actually working with law enforcement to find rapists and traffickers.
Predators.
And people who were, yes. And therefore, law enforcement was able, had this lifeline there to actually stop crimes like this from happening. Once that site got shut down, all that happened is all the creepos like just crawled back up into the cave. And it's not like they stopped doing what they were doing. Just now, law enforcement didn't have that access to talk to them. So this law that was made to maybe make things easier for them, it had the exact opposite effect.
Right.
And since the law was passed in 2018, there has been one case that was prosecuted and went through.
One. In the past 6 years.
Yeah. Whereas the amount of sex workers who have been directly put into more danger and harm, it's not even quantifiable.
No, it's not. Like, for those who are Canadian and like myself, we also have a similar model up here in Canada called the Nordic model, which also has this kind of and I'm sure you can have thoughts on that as well. Yeah. Since I want to talk about that for sure. I just want to say the end demand model does not work. It just puts sex workers at more harm and more risk. So stop doing that, please. But sorry, Sten, yeah. you got excited there, please. Please continue.
Also want to describe what the Nordic model means. So that's generally referred to when we're talking about full service sex work. Mm-hmm. So what it does is it means, and I know this is Canada's model. There's obviously some in Nordic countries.
Yes.
The Nordic model.
Sweden, Norway, all those places as well also have this.
So it's nice that they don't criminalize selling sex labor, but they criminalize the person buying the sex labor. And so it is nice, again, to be like, well, at least they're not like just throwing a bunch of women, again, it's not only women, but in prison for doing sex labor. But instead, they are ruining the lives of men who engage in and who purchase. And as someone who has worked in sex work for 20 fucking years, like, I've learned a lot about men. And so, men are trash for sure. Totally. Men are trash. But also they're amazing people. Also they're human beings. Both things can exist at the same time. And that's the thing. So, especially my years stripping in the strip club and stuff. And I think I was raised by someone who was kind of second wavy feminist, sex work is exploitative, and definitely didn't call it sex work back then. And
right. Right.
And these men, why are you giving these men what they want? Yada, yada. But I was just kind of like, I'm not sure it is that way. But then I started dancing in the strip club and interacting with men every day for my job. And there's just, sure, you have your typical standard kind of whatever, frat bros or just a standard type of strip club customer. But then you have all these men who it's just like, you can feel this. The culture has forced men into a box of not being able to talk about their needs, emotional needs. It's almost as though they're not meant to have emotional needs.
Right.
But the strip club is the place where they could come and actually sort of express those needs. And with sex workers, with all sex workers, if it's in-person stuff, it's like, here is my safe haven. Here's the place where I can actually be myself and not feel fear of judgment. And just, there are many men who just need some of that, need a touch, need some
connection,
affection, all types of things, to where it's like, why is that a crime? If this is a need that, lots of human beings have, and they can't access it anywhere else aside from paying for it, those men have to be seen as criminals just because they're buying this service. I find that appalling, and
it's
not justice as far as I'm concerned.
No, it's not. And then of course those clients are scared to even seek out sex workers as well. So it's a domino effect that's now it's going to affect business. And then now what else do these sex workers have to do in order to survive? Where are they going to find these clients? Because we also they also, in terms of full service sex work, cannot also advertise. So it's one thing after another. And again, along with that domino effect, it just really puts sex workers in a dehumanized space where we can't even cease to exist.
Yeah.
How is that right?
Sorry. Especially when they're walking around white knighting and saying these women are being exploited and stop purchasing women and stuff like that. And there's just so many things to say about that. But they don't even listen to us when we say, like, when you look someone in the face and say, like, I like this job. I chose this job. I looked around at the world and all of my opportunities, and I said, this is the thing that I would like to do. Please. Mm-hmm. Can I?
Like, we have to ask for permission when no other jobs are asking for permission. Like, what the fuck?
Thank you. And that's what I'm talking about. It's like, so you're going to come in front of me and be like, this woman's being exploited. And I'm going to say, okay. See, this is why, like, even when people talk about exploitation, when they say the word, it's like my little fucking spidey sense goes off, because I'm just like, okay, you're about to say some shit right now that, like, you kind of don't understand labor. Mm-hmm. Because to, and this is something I love, Eric Sprankle is a author, mm-hmm. has this kind of famous quote, and it's, if you feel like sex workers are being exploited but coal miners are not, you need to be figuring out what you actually think about labor.
Yes. And that's,
you know, just, I talk about this a lot, but like, my husband was a diesel mechanic in his 20s, and like, he was, you know, it's backbreaking work.
Yeah, and, literally.
And he literally got a herniated disc and arthritis in his lower back, and he had to have back surgery.
Oh my God.
I mean, luckily, you know, through that job, you get paid shit, but you get good benefits. So that wasn't an issue. But it's like, then he couldn't do that job anymore when he came back to work. Luckily, they gave him a job as like a supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that, you know, then he left that job. We started working together, and we run, you know, we run the company together now. But he's like, people would look at his life and say, well, now you're being exploited. Or maybe as a male in the industry, he's exploiting women. I don't know. I can't have my, do their mental gymnastics.
Make it make sense.
But like, he looks at his life and he's like, man, when I was getting paid, you know, $15 an hour to destroy my body, how is that not me selling my body? Like, I have never felt more exploited in my life than when I was doing those jobs, versus now I go on vacations all the time. I decide when I work. I mean, all of the things, like, our life together now, like, we are in control of our life in ways that when he was, you know, reliant upon wages and doing labor under capitalism for a capitalist, like, that's the exploitation right there.
Yes.
And, and it's just, it really, that one right there really frustrates me. I don't understand how people can scream about exploitation of sex workers who, consensual sex workers, and not even have this, the vision to look at all of the people who are being exploited by labor.
Oh my gosh. Totally.
Exploited. Yeah. Yeah.
Even myself, so, as like a corporate office worker, when I was working in office before, there was so much misogyny happening there, and just like exploitative in terms of like, okay, I'm getting paid technically more than minimum wage, but like at what cost? At the cost of my mental health and my sanity, weird politics in the office, weird people making sexual jabs at me.
Yeah. All the time. I was a server before – you know, this is like a year before I started stripping in the strip club. And I feel lucky. I enjoyed my job at the Olive Garden.
But love the breadsticks.
But the stories you hear from people who work in the service industry, it's outrageous, especially women.
Yes.
Like, people grab at them. People call them sweetie, honey, like diminutive. the ways in which you are sort of dishonestly being exploited, even sexually, versus just being fucking honest about it. Being like, I'm just gonna go over here and suck this dick, because I will make more sucking this dick than I would working an 8-hour shift at the restaurant, and I'll feel fucking better about it.
Yeah. It's so true. But yeah, like, as you mentioned here in all these examples, like, there's unfortunately so many double standards that exist. And it kind of circles back to what we were saying earlier with the tabooness of sex related to anything, but in this context, like the sex industry is still very, very much a thing that is looked down upon, seen as like non-legitimized as a form of work, all these things. But I'm curious, talking back and circling back to Sesta Fosta, what, since that's been, okay, it's been 6 years since that's happened. We've talked about, okay, there's been one case there. Yeah, what other outcomes have you found in your own research? Has, like, what kind of impacts has Sesta Fosta created?
Yeah.
That's a big question.
Yeah. So, yes. I mean, definitely that Sesta Fosta, but also sort of the ripple effect that it had, which I would wrap up into that ripple effect, Visa and MasterCard, they decided that the way, and also it's these anti-sex trafficking groups, which are actually anti-porn groups in disguise.
Yes.
They realized finally we have to stop going to the government to try to get these things made illegal. We have to go to the credit card companies.
Right.
And I'm sad to say that they figured that out. And it was pretty effective, at least in making, as a content creator, our lives like way more difficult.
Yeah.
So they went to Visa and MasterCard. They got the New York Times to write an article about this. And so they went and they went to Pornhub. And now Pornhub had issues. So right off the bat, first thing I want to say about this is, like, I can talk about it and summarize it in my best language, but please, please, please go on Netflix and watch the documentary called The Money Shot.
Yes, yes. With Siri Dahl.
Yes, Siri's in it. It details, greatly details this whole story. Fosta Sesta, these anti-porn groups, anti-sex trafficking groups, just the way this all played out in real time. And it just, it speaks of the whole thing and how it has impacted creators who are trying to make money on their website and stuff like that. So that was the reason why. Pornhub used to be a site that, you know, anyone could go and upload whatever they wanted to Pornhub. This was a problem. When Pornhub first came around, creators, us, we were like, this fucking sucks because these people are stealing the content that we're making and they're putting it up for free.
Yes.
So if you just did this thing where you required everyone who uploads to Pornhub to be validated, meaning they upload their ID, they fill out paperwork, like everything is legitimate, then we will not have this problem anymore. We won't be mad at your website. Like, we'll be supportive of it. And then we can sell our clips. And so they did have a place where we could sell our clips. It was called Model Hub. So it was just like a clip store. And we were all making a little bit of money off of it and actually doing pretty well, just because Pornhub was the most recognized website on the fucking planet.
Yes.
So the traffic that Pornhub had went directly through our clip stores and we were making money. It was nice. But we were still mad about the fact that anyone could upload anything. And we knew that would cause problems too, obviously.
Yes.
Someone shot some bullshit with their phone, didn't get consent from their partner, they could upload it. Someone could shoot something with a person who's underage, upload it to Pornhub anonymously, totally get away with it.
Right.
So while that wasn't happening anywhere near as prolifically as it happens on Facebook every single day, who gets completely left alone and out of this conversation for some reason. It still was a thing that did happen, and that is what eventually took Pornhub down.
Right.
They're still around, obviously, but I mean, Visa and MasterCard said, you cannot use our credit cards to sell people anything anymore.
Right.
And I had thought that that meant, like, until you get your shit together, but Pornhub now has their shit together. Like, in response to that, Pornhub was like, okay, no more. Now you have to be verified to upload to Pornhub. Changed everything, so there's nothing stolen up there anymore. It's all like, and then now it's like very, very strict. You have to have not just the front picture of the ID, but also the back picture of the ID.
Right.
Very strict paperwork for every single model that appears in a video. And I'm good. Like, I mean, that's I think that that's a good thing to mm-hmm. to make us have to a certain extent, but it definitely took away that clip store on Pornhub and all that traffic we used to get. So now they just started a new thing where it's like, if you want to even monetize your content at all. So what we used to be able, what we've been able to do since this happened in 2020 is make ad revenue. So the advertisements that are on like my page, for example, like I'll get a few cents every time someone watches a video on my page.
Right.
So it's not very much money, but it's something. And now they're saying, well, if you want to keep earning that money, you have to upload a new video at least like once a month or something.
Mm.
Which is fun. Not great. Still not great. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I thought eventually they'd be, you know, they complied with everything that the credit cards asked for. So I don't understand now why they still have yet to reestablish the Model Hub page. Yeah. And that's a mystery. I wrote an email. I asked them specifically. They said, we're still working on it. And I'm like, cool. It's been 4 years.
4 years.
No longer. What's going on? Have to wait for this. But yes. So we were talking about the impacts.
Yeah. I mean, like, this goes along the general topic of discrimination against sex workers, right?
And that's really what it is. I mean, like, that is a huge impact. Like, even just that one element of the Pornhub thing. It's like, that was a big chunk of money that I was receiving that is now gone. And so that's one thing. Another thing is, I think we were talking a little bit about, so it's not just in America or in Canada or in North America. What the United States is, unfortunately, kind of this leader, this like global leader for a lot of stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
When the drug prohibition was coming around in like the 70s, 60s, late 60s, 70s, we kind of pioneered that. I hate saying we, but in the United States. And it spread. So, you know, you've got now, it's like cannabis is illegal in America and we have our racist reasons for doing that. And then other countries are like, oh, we should probably step in line with that as well. And then it's used as a weapon all around the world now. And you have extreme places like the Philippines where they fucking execute you for smoking weed. Like, it's not good, especially when we know it was all based in racism.
Yes.
Okay. So and that's exactly like what's been happening with this FOSTA-SESTA thing as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, someone had asked a question on Twitter about places that have decriminalized sex work.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Not
a
lot of places have done that. New Zealand is the shining example on the hill.
Yes.
They, in 2003, they got together. I mean, this was a sex worker-led initiative. Like, government and sex workers were working hand in hand. Like, the government of New Zealand was like, maybe we should listen to sex workers.
Yes.
And write legislation around their lived experiences rather than through this lens of puritanical judgment. And so that has been a great thing.
Yes, but definitely.
For example, like this article right here, I'll say, quote, this is from the Anti-Trafficking Review.
Okay.
It says U.S. anti-trafficking policies that conflate consensual sex work with trafficking influence other nations' sex work laws, encouraging the criminalization of migrant and street-based sex work clients and most recently their online platforms.
Mm-hmm.
The 2018 FOSTA-SESTA and the FBI's closure of the advertising site Backpage.com affected sex workers who legally advertise online in New Zealand. So talking about the effects, I mean, it's just, again, it's such a, I hate that we are these like dominating colonial leaders of the planet, because New Zealand decided to do things in a harm reduction way,
which is a great perspective.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's, everything is going to cause harm. Every fucking job you could possibly do, there's a, you could get a fucking paper cut, but, But to think about it in terms of like these are things that human beings are going to do, have done for 200, 300,000 years. Like, we're not going to stop it with a law by making it a crime. Mm-hmm. So what's the best things that we can do to decrease potential harm? That is how things should be run. Totally. So New Zealand is like, this is what we're going to do. Then United States passes this terrible law and it has those far-reaching effects on people who are legally doing their work in another fucking country.
Yeah.
So talking about like the negative effects of this, I mean, yeah, it's
very far-reaching.
Exactly. Exactly. And so that is now causing them harm in ways that they were actively trying to avoid.
No, and if you are interested, if anyone else is listening that is interested in learning about New Zealand's decriminalization model, listen back to, I want to say season 4 or season 5 with Vixen Temple, who's from New Zealand, who can definitely speak to that, who's also part of that movement as well back in the day. So please listen in. I mean, talking about other further impacts from this anti-trafficking movement, I know that we also want to talk about like the intersectionality and the parallels between sex workers and also queer folks, and in terms of their rights being suppressed. Yeah. Where do you want to start off with that? Because that's also this is gonna be a 3-parter episode.
This is such a massive topic, right?
It is.
Yeah. So I also, my very good friends, Ella Darling and Sovereign Sire, have their own podcast. It's called Ill Repute. Mm-hmm. And I was just before this episode listening to their episode on the witch trials, and not the Salem witch trials. That was really towards the end of all this, mm-hmm. but sort of the origin of it, talking about the history.
History, yeah.
And I was shocked to hear that really, I mean, it was like as capitalism was being born, it was, we don't want women gathering together in certain spaces. So we're going to make, like, sex work used to be a normal, common part of society. And they were like, we're going to go ahead and make that illegal because we don't want women having the power. And I mean, they explain it way better than I am trying to
summarize it. I'm going to have to listen to it.
Yeah, please listen to it. But I mean, it goes back that far, and it's, let's make it illegal so that they can't have access to that power, so they can't be their own means of production, and they need to have a man to, for them to, you know, survive.
Mm-hmm.
Which it brings me to today, where it's like the scapegoating of society's ills, mm-hmm. Or perceived ills, I guess. We, you know, it's religion, it's all of this stuff. So when I think about, sorry, so many thoughts. Oh my God. Okay. So in this country, we have this threat, and it does scare me. And it's called Project 2025. And it is stuff that's been happening. The evangelical movement has grown to these epic proportions. And even if it's not a majority of people, because it definitely isn't, it's a minority, mm-hmm. but they've got the power. They weaseled their way in to these spaces that have extraordinary amounts of money and influence.
Right.
And they have demonized queer people, and they have demonized sex work and sexual expression. Yes. They have conflated identity, any queer identity, with, I hate to even say the word, but like grooming.
So I know. This is their whole basis of their arguments.
Yeah. And like, they've sexualized identity. Being a gay person, being a queer person, it is not about fucking. It is about who you love. It is about who you are attracted to. It's about the relationships you have. It's not about where the penis goes. Like, and the, I mean, fuck, man. Like, when you're thinking about the Don't Say Gay bill in Florida, it's like teachers who are gay are like, am I allowed to have a photo on my desk of myself with my husband? Like, can I have that? Or is this now going to be against the law?
Right.
Whereas a person who is in a straight marriage doesn't have to have those worries. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm saying, you know, bringing it around with the witch hunt idea is that is what is happening right now.
The witch hunt,
the satanic panic. Like, we've seen these things happen in over and over and over again in history, and we are deeply entrenched in one of those right now, where it's like, let's just blame the people who are different. Mm-hmm. And then transness starts becoming a more acceptable thing. And right. So now it's not just the like, oh, we have more instances of transness because it's a more acceptable thing in society and people don't have to live in a closet anymore. Instead, it's our children are being brainwashed and groomed into being trans.
Right.
You know, by radical left.
Oh my gosh. And I don't mean to laugh at this. It's serious stuff. It really is serious stuff. But like, as part of my vanilla job, I do work in sexual health education, comprehensive sexual health education. And we're seeing this a lot from parents' rights groups and the PAC and them coming at us as educators to be like, why are you grooming our children? Why are you sexualizing our children? Why are you exposing our children to this rhetoric? And it's a really dangerous narrative to play around, but it really has affected all the kids and also our work this school year, and has been completely evident. So everything that you've been saying, I see the effects of that too.
I know. And it's terrible. It makes me sad because, like, for many, many years, for the longest time, I know me personally, I would look up at Canada and be like, man, if I could just go there. I was like, they've got it figured out, man, with their fucking universal healthcare. Like, could I just go there? unfortunately, like, since the Trump era, like, you guys have been catching our sickness.
Yes. Unfortunately, yes, it's correct. Because even, like, you guys have this huge anti-trans movement that's happening in the States right now. That's, like, really apparent in, like, a lot of the laws and bills are attempting to be passed. I was looking at some statistics. Yeah. I'll just quote them really quickly. There's like 600 bills in 2023. 87 of those bills that are anti-trans passed. They're already up to 539 bills this year, and 20 has passed. And that's through the translegislation.com where that stat's coming from. But you're saying, oh, yeah, Canada's great. Unfortunately, yes, since the Trump era, we are also being affected by that. Like, in Alberta, they are also banning a lot of and disbanding a lot of, like, LGBTQ and trans, like, safe spaces, and also implementing some of those anti-trans laws. I don't know how far that's gone in, because Alberta's the next state, the next province over, but something that I have seen in the news. We've also had, like, a lot of similar things that have happened in the States also now happening and occurring here. So it's climate here is not that great. And I'm from Vancouver, which is pretty damn liberal. So it's just, like, disappointing to hear this stuff happening over and over again. And it just seems to be getting worse.
And it is a cycle of history. But it is scary because, you know, I don't know if I was just taught about the Holocaust in a much more comprehensive, deeper way than a lot of other people. That could be true. I don't know. When I was going to school, we touched on the Holocaust every single year in one class or another. I grew up, my parents were teachers. My mom had units where she was teaching the Holocaust. She's an English teacher. So she would read like Night by Elie Wiesel or just the Diary of Anne Frank in eighth grade. That's eighth grade reading.
Yeah, totally.
And so as she was preparing her, lessons, it just infiltrated into me, you know, and she's talking about this stuff and then we're watching movies and I'm just reading about it all the time. And so to me, it was just this thing that looms large, that it's like, how is this a thing that happened in history? Like, how did the entire world just let these camps exist where people were just being slaughtered? And, like, it's just so unreal. It's so mind-boggling. And then, like, it's kind of happening right now.
Yeah, it is.
In Palestine and in Israel.
Oh, and, my gosh.
And just looking at the stuff that happened in the lead up. So this is even just talking about American culture. So in Germany, before the Holocaust started, Berlin was this place that was so – it was fucking gay there, man.
Yeah.
It was gay. There was this whole – it was celebrated. It wasn't really seen as this scourge of humanity. It was just like, oh, these people are different and they're having a good time. And like –
yeah.
And transness was coming out, and this author was – I mean, there were scientists and doctors that were compiling research and information, and they had a library where they were keeping all of that stuff. Of course, I'm not talking about this with as much knowledge as I would like to, but it is still important. Mm-hmm. This was the thing that happened, I want to say, a few weeks ago on Twitter. And then so someone had said – this type of stuff, this book burning and this vilifying of gayness and this erasure of the literature and the research and the humanity of these people happened in the Holocaust. And then J.K. Rowling was
oh my
like,
God. Ah. She said, it was a pipe dream or something, whatever she wrote.
Yes. Like, are you serious? She did a fucking Holocaust denial. She did a Holocaust denial trying to say that it was about – that didn't happen.
That woman keeps digging like so many freaking holes for herself. Like,
yeah.
And I was a big Harry – I mean, I still am a big Harry Potter fan. I used to love that book growing up, and it's just like so disappointing when she just continues to make these remarks against trans folks, and it just continues to keep getting worse and worse. Yes. And now the Holocaust denial. I was like, are you serious?
Holocaust denial. And she just can sit in her fucking castle,
yes,
her literal castle, just obliterating – I mean, just really, really encouraging people. And that's what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. When someone mm-hmm. who can sit in their literal fucking castle and encourage others to delegitimize these human beings, and it's just it's dangerous. It's fucking dangerous. And so that comes back to this country, and it comes back to making laws about specific people and what they can say, where they can exist in public life,
right?
And that scares me. I've seen history. I know what human beings are capable of. And I see it, to me, it's like I'm watching that happen in front of my face in real time.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty disgusting. It's scary. Like, I literally feel like World War III is going to happen in our lifetime.
Yeah. And it will involve some shit.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Holy crap. This this is such a crazy episode right now. Like, but very important conversations to have for sure, though.
I know. And this is my thing. Listen, I don't I don't live my daily life in terror. Okay. I have to find my own peace. That's part of being somewhat I hate to use the word spiritual, thoughtful, maybe trying to reach enlightenment.
Yeah, I get you.
You have to acknowledge the suffering and the troubles, and then you have to find a way to sort of learn to live with it, almost like rise above it.
Yeah.
And I just realized, like, what am I capable of as a single person? And I feel like I'm capable of using my platform to try to inform more people, to try to open minds, to try to get more people to understand like where we're coming from as being parts of these marginalized intersectional communities.
Right.
And that's the best I can do. I try to do it when and where I can. And then I have to like sit in a hot tub and smoke a joint and just,
you know what I mean? No, I completely get you. And like, again, you've earned a new subscriber because I'm just loving everything that you're saying here right now. So I'm just like, oh my God, yes to all of this. And I think the more that we normalize these topics and these conversations, I feel like we're making a change because, you know, I've had some folks that kind of come not onto the show, but like have contacted me on X or Twitter, and like they're not even a sex worker, but they're
they've
listened to the show. Like, hey, I just stumbled by your podcast and just want to say, like, you've changed my way of thinking. And I'm like, my work here is done. Like, it makes me so happy. So
it's the most validating thing ever. I have had people, I get emails probably a few times a year specifically about people saying, watching you and your work, but also the way you live your life, the person that you are, has inspired me to come out of the closet and live my life more true to myself and you know, without those shackles. And when people say shit like that to me, it is just like, my purpose in life is being fulfilled.
Yes.
Like I had an experience, I had a meditative sort of experience where it was like, that is what just came. It was planted the seed in my mind. It was like, this is your purpose in life, is to inspire people. And so, I mean, I think I was already just living my life the way I did. But it was more that focus of like, this is what you're meant to do. This is like who you are. That when I receive messages like that from people, it is just the most fulfilling thing. And it just, it's so validating that I am living my life's purpose, that I'm doing the thing that is the most meaningful to me. And that's fucking sex work. So
hell yeah. I love that. I mean, really quickly, I know that I wanted to make time because you also said you spoke at a conference a couple months ago too, in the Chicago area, about sex workers and college campuses and how they can be better supported. If you want to quickly go into that too. So I think it's still, you know, looped into the conversation here as well. So
I think so too, because it is, again, about legitimizing sex work as a form of labor. You go to college to prepare yourself for a life of some kind of labor, one or the other, whether that's sex work or not. But sex work is a way that you can help to pay for such things if you want to if you want a higher education and stuff, especially as those prices get more and more out of control.
Yep.
Yeah. So this was actually just a few weeks ago, and the conference was called ACPA, which stands for American College Personnel Association. So it was basically a conference for people who are involved in higher education. So professors, administrators of universities and colleges. And there are lots of different, like basically talks going on and stuff like that. So a couple years ago, I was invited to the University of Rhode Island by Dr. Annie Russell, who is the head of the Gender and Sexuality Center on that campus. And she does an event called the Sex Fest.
Cool.
Very cool. And it is all about making spaces for queerness, for the fact that human beings have sexuality and being able to ask questions about it, to have discussions about porn and like to have like porn literacy and all these other things are very supportive, especially of the queer community. So she had reached out to me to come and be a keynote speaker at that event. I spoke in a class. The class was race, class, and sexuality.
Nice.
And then what else? My gosh, I did workshop presentations. So how to please a woman and queer sex. So I had an amazing time. That was my first time ever being asked by like a higher institution to come and speak on a college. And I heard colleagues of mine had been invited to do such things. And I was like, how do I get that?
You're awesome. So
thank you.
It makes so much sense.
It finally happened. And that was just great. And I developed a friendship with Dr. Russell. And so she comes to this event like fairly often. And she got together with me and another student from the school, and we wrote a paper.
Amazing. And,
so we wrote a paper together, and then basically she wanted to take this paper and turn it into a presentation that we could give at this conference. Gotcha. So that's what we did, and it was called Student Sex Workers on Campus, A Radical Support Ethic. So it was really cool. I'd never done anything like this before. And our presentation had about like more than 70 people in it.
Awesome.
So many of them were obviously also queer. And there was even some of them were former sex workers even, which was really cool to hear about.
So cool.
And then even after we gave the whole presentation, there was like a line of people who wanted to talk to both of us. And I could tell some of them that was not the first time they'd been introduced to me. I'll put it that way. And so that was also just, again, like so validating, and that there is space for these conversations to be happening. Mm-hmm. But what we were talking about is that, you know, on college campuses, there are all of these various like support groups for different identities. And so when you look at support groups of, you'll have like a queer alliance or whatever.
Right.
Queer people account for probably like 10 to 15% of the population on a college campus. Mm. And sex workers are anywhere from 2 to 9%.
Wow.
And the idea being that that's big enough to validate having a support group for them as well. So we were basically pitching that concept that like if there's a way for you on your campus to provide resources and support for the sex workers on your campus. And I talked about like all the different ways they could be engaging with sex work. And Annie talked a lot about the ways that they could provide support. And yeah, so that was basically what we did. And it was really, really cool. And I just definitely hope for more of that in my career future, for sure. I would love to do more of that stuff. But I want to go back to the hope thing real quickly before I
start. For sure. Talking. Yeah, of course. Is that
I also don't want to be all like doomy and gloomy. You know, very, very easy to do that.
Yes.
There is a lot of hope, and I feel a lot of hope with the younger generation and with the Gen Z and stuff like that, is that first of all, they've grown up with queerness being pretty fucking normalized.
Yes.
And even sex work, they've been born and come up in this country where we're in the later stages of capitalism. You know, my parents were easily able to buy a house in their late 20s. I'm 40 and I just bought a house and I had to move across the country to be able to afford something. So these kids who are even younger, it's not like prices are going down.
No.
So I think that when they take this stark view of the world that they're about to go into, they can understand why someone would choose to engage in some form of sex work. And so I think there's hope in these younger generations coming up to be a little more empathetic, a little more understanding. And I think there's a lot of evidence of that, even if you just sort of scroll around TikTok and stuff like that.
It's very true. Yeah, no, I echo that statement. I also think that there's hope as well in the next generation. As much as sometimes we love to hate on them, I think they're doing some good. So
I really do.
Sin, there are a few questions that you might have seen on Twitter that have come in as well. So maybe we have time to go over that as well. This first person is writing in is someone from the U.S. who has assisted people coming out of trafficking situations. I would like more comparisons of how exiting work in the U.S. versus Canada, like what services are available free/discounted there, and if disability is affected by work credits there from trafficking.
I don't know about the work credit thing.
I don't know what that is either. I am sorry. Okay. I was like, I should have asked.
I was thinking it was like a Canadian thing. So I was like, do you know?
Not that I know of.
Yes. So shout out to another performer who is just even more educated than I am about the stuff. She speaks on it very, very well. Summer Hart. She's very involved with this sort of thing, especially mutual aid. So she's the head of Sex Worker Mutual Aid, which is a nationwide program, but she's from Vegas. She talks a lot about this. But what I've gained in knowledge, mainly from talking to her, is that these anti-trafficking organizations, anti-porn, anti-sex work organizations, their main goal is well, their main goal is to make porn illegal.
Right.
But when it comes to this stuff, so for example, like let's say someone gets arrested for participating in sex work. Let's say someone who works on the street gets arrested. It's basically like they can go to jail and have, you know, this on their record, and it'll really fuck up their life, probably just put them back in this cycle, right? Mm-hmm. Of a dangerous cycle where they've got someone who's controlling their life. And this is even for people who are being trafficked, like victims of being trafficked. So they're doing this non-consensually. And they're given these two options: go to jail and have your life all fucked up, or go with this anti-sex trafficking like group, and they'll take care of you, and they'll get you set up, and they'll make it so you don't have to go back and do that kind of work, and da 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 da. Like, they will hand them $300 and say, "Okay, now you go and live your life like a good girl." And they're just standing there, like, "I thought you were going to provide me with like support and resources." Yeah. And ways to transition out of this, but that's not their focus. Again, yes. Like that's not what their goal is, to actually help people. Their goal is to get more money in the form of donations into their organization so that then they can use that money to probably give it to lobbyists, infiltrate the government, make laws.
I hate this so much. Yeah. I mean, if I can add to that too, and I'll put my little criminology spin on it. It's similar to the not having support thing is what I'm kind of dabbling into here. So yes, they're not being properly set up for success. This also goes for folks who have gone to jail, have paid their time, and now they're like, you're free. But there's no support after that. It's just they're left in the dust to figure things out. And most likely those people are going to repeat crimes and end up back in jail. So similar things here. Some other things might happen. They might end up back in sex work or might end up being exploited again because there aren't any proper avenues for folks to succeed after that. So as much as the organizations want to help, quote unquote, help people, it doesn't end there. There needs to be more support to be done in order for these people to actually live a proper, fulfilling life. So it's complicated.
Yeah, exactly.
Complicated, but it doesn't have to be complicated. You know?
But that's the thing is, like, so many things about life are complicated and nuanced, you know, and we, especially Americans, it's like we want everything to be very black and white, good versus evil.
Yes.
And that's just not how it is.
No, there's a lot of gray. It's very true. So there are a couple more questions too, which are also very specific as well, but, I don't know if we have the answers to this, but if not, I'm going to try to find the answers as well later on, but part one of two of these questions. So does prostitution actually lead to increased trafficking for both decriminalization and legalization? I think we already covered this earlier today, but countries where sex work, well, this person is legalized. Legalization, you know, is different than decriminalization. But do you see any positive things that come out of it, or is it negative, like crime rates? So loaded questions there.
Yeah, very loaded. But I do love thinking about talking about researching into New Zealand for so many different reasons. That country has this magical allure. I've been there. I really want to go back. But yeah, so one thing I was able to find that shows a way in which decriminalization leads to less harm is, for example, so in New Zealand, there is a group, outreach group called New Zealand Prostitutes Collective, NZPC. Mm-hmm. And once you decriminalize, I mean, you want to talk about the cops too? Please.
How much time do we have?
So quickly, as we know, cops know that prostitution is illegal, so they often rape sex workers and stuff like that, and they totally completely get away with it. Okay, so But one thing that they've done in New Zealand is, so now that that sort of relationship is not about cops versus sex workers, it's how can police help sex workers when a crime has been committed against them? So one thing that happened is the relationship between, this is a quote from an article of, about New Zealand. Sorry, I'm just going to read it.
Sure, sure.
I can't cite it for you right now. The relationship between the police and the street workers and city council's policies of installing street lights and security cameras in high traffic places, like specifically places where street-based sex work was happening,
right,
have been successful in improving the safety of street sex workers in Christchurch specifically. So that's just like one. So imagine that being one small nugget of an idea where it's like, when you don't have this good versus evil, as mm-hmm. in police being good, sex worker being bad, when you don't have that dynamic going on anymore, then you can work with the sex worker community to make them safer. Even just a little thing like, hey, let's put up more streetlights in this place where there's lots of sex workers, and then they're less likely to be attacked or harassed or whatever. So right. If you can imagine that being one little nugget and it's spreading out from there, it would change stigma. It would change so many things for the lived experiences of sex workers.
Totally.
Whether they've chosen that work or they've chosen it because they've been economically, but you know, it's kind of like, I feel like every job is economically pressure. Like, listen, yes. If I didn't have to work, I fucking wouldn't. I'd do other things. I'd fucking go on hikes and like travel the world. But I need the money to eat the food and yeah. to have a place to live. So again, that is coercion.
No, yes.
Economic yes. coercion. And it doesn't matter if it's for me eating a pussy or for me cooking a hamburger or filing a fucking file. I don't know. What do people in offices do all day? I don't
know. Lots of typing away and standing by the water cooler, because that's what I used to do. yeah. If I can add one thing to that too, I know, and I've heard of cases as well where sex workers have filed cases against those who have sexually assaulted them in New Zealand as well, and have won yes. those cases because yes. now this is seen as a legitimized profession, and the lawmakers and their government and police officers now believe them. So that's,
yes.
I think, a huge win. I think like people are actually believing sex workers now, and I'm not making this up. Like it's, yeah. like a huge, huge thing.
Yeah.
So that's one good thing. And yeah, in order to also answer that last question too, yes, New Zealand is one of them for countries that are decriminalized. Belgium is also decriminalized as of March of 2022. You could also listen to the episode. I also did that back in season 4, I want to say. But I will say, the laws are still not like, it's great if you're a citizen of those countries. If you're a migrant or immigrant worker, you are not covered under the law. Okay. So, and I've been meaning to do an episode on that as well. As some of you may or may not know, I sit on the board at Swan Vancouver, who helps migrant sex workers. Specifically, I'm waiting for someone to have time to do that with me. Otherwise, I will also do an episode with like Red Canary Song or something. But that episode is coming in season 7. Just hang tight and we'll have more answers for you. But just want to throw it out there that the grass is not always greener, but it's mostly green. It's mostly green with a couple patches of brown. So
yeah, I think with all this stuff that's so hundreds and hundreds of years of institutionalized bullshit, it's like, if we could just start somewhere, mm-hmm. you know? I know that it's like greener grass with patches of brown. It's like, we should just start somewhere.
Yeah.
And then we can be like, okay, now let's expand this to include, because these are also human beings.
Yes. Yes.
They and to be treated like human beings.
That's all we want. That's just all we want. It's not a lot to ask for.
Yeah. And if you don't like it, you don't have to fucking do it. Guess yeah. what?
Like, how does that affect you? Like, how does my work affect you?
You don't have to engage if you don't like yeah. it. Don't look at the porn if you don't like it. Don't try
don't
to take
it away
from everybody else.
Yeah. We can have nice things. Sin, this was such an incredible episode. I could probably talk with you for another couple hours. Easy. But, and I'm sure other folks listening too would probably want to get in touch with you as well. But with that being said, where can we all find you?
Totally. So since I'm on a podcast, let's just start with, please go and listen to my podcast as well. It's called Sage Advice with Sin Sage. And I talk to a sex worker every other week and learn about their lives and their involvement in the industry. And then we do dispense advice. We have listeners email me with questions about sex, relationships, about pornography, how it works, about sex work, whatever. And we use our skills, we use our experience to hopefully dispense some good advice. And that you could listen to it on literally every podcast platform. It is everywhere. And it is also on my website, where I'd also like you to go, which is sin-sage.com. You spell my name Sin with two N's. So sinn-sage.com. That's my website. You can order custom videos from me, and you can see where all my other clip stores. So I have a Clips for Sale. I have a Many Vids. And on social media, I am on Twitter. That's my most active social media. I'm just at Sin Sage. Instagram, at Real Sin Sage. TikTok, at Real Sin Sage. I'm on Reddit, r/Sin Sage.
All the places.
I know there's going to be things I'm leaving out. Oh, my OnlyFans. And I have a loyal fans now too. And, you know, just, you got to be a hustler in this sex work world to make it work.
You absolutely do. All those links are posted in the show notes. If you haven't already clicked around while listening, now is your time to do that. And also be sure to subscribe and listen and follow Sin in all of her places, because she's doing a lot of great, amazing things. And for everyone else listening, your homework is to also rate, review 5 stars if you feel like that is an appropriate rating. I think it is, but if you want to write a review as well, please do that, because all of that really helps with discoverability for the show. So the more you do that, the more others can discover the show as well, especially those who are needing resources. So do that. And other than that, if you want to get in touch with myself, I am on Twitter, also very active on there at Stripped by Sia. On Instagram, my new handle is Stripped by Sia Podcast. My other one was, gone, banned, whatever it was. Whatever what Meta decides to do, and I never got it back. So that's a thing. Support financially via Patreon, patreon.com/strippedbysia. And if you want to be in the show, contact me at strippedbysia.com. There's a contact page there. You can kind of fill in the fields and just like let me know what topic you're wanting to do, because I'm actively recruiting for season 7. So yes, lots of homework for you all listening to do. But with that being said, it's new episodes every single Sunday, dropping at midnight. Sin, it was a pleasure talking with you today. Thank you so much for all of your expertise and knowledge. I like truly enjoyed our conversation today, and I think you're awesome.
Thank you so much. I feel the same. It was really great, so I appreciate it.
Thank you. See y'all next week. 2 Stripped by Sia, hosted, produced, and edited by Steph Sia, music by Ted D, graphic design by Maria Bellandarama, and photography by Ian Dabrin.